Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to
Love Letters Live,
a show about saying exactly what you mean in the clearest, dearest way possible. This is a place to learn to open your heart, speak your mind, and state your case. And this is a show, above all, about gratitude felt and gratitude expressed and mailed.
This show is about no more blah, 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 just great conversation about the things that matter in life. We have a wonderful guest today, but before we get started, Janet and I like to fill you in a bit about our view of a love letter. So a love letter can be to anyone at all. Certainly it can be to a sweetheart. It can also be to family, friends, special teachers, anyone who has really been important in your life no matter how. And living or long gone, a love letter can even be to yourself.
The point is, a love letter is a real letter on real paper, stamped and mailed. A love letter, I think, can be to anyone, as Teresa said, but to people you want to invite into your life, for wooing, for seducing. It can be a letter to see somebody gently and kindly out of your life. Love letters encourage. Love letters express passion. Love letters are for promises meant to be kept. There is nothing like putting it on paper as a permanent commitment. There's no taking it back. There's no denying it. The evidence is always there. A love letter is really your own history documented in your own hand. Love letters can be for anything.
Well, of course, they're a joy to receive, or they should be, but they're also a great joy to send. In my opinion, since I've learned about writing love letters from Janet, and I had been writing love letters and didn't know it, but now I'm writing even more, and I just find them a treat. I take a special time out of my life to remember the great things about someone, a special friend, a family member that I have great times with, that we have special memories, and sometimes I take a half a day just to write this as a gift to myself.
That's lovely. And speaking of gifts, a love letter really is a gift. It's a gift custom designed by you for one person in this universe. Now, having said that, I'm aware that people could write a love letter to children as a group, or a couple of people at a time, but as a rule, not. And in terms of going beyond romance, and Teresa saying that she has always written them but didn't know it, I think a love letter really is any truth put to paper in a compassionate and loving way and sent. A love letter not sent can have some wonderful emotional value, but it's not really a letter until it's been sent.
So every week on this show, we talk to people who have come through some challenges in life or have just lived long enough to have some love to express for the blessings that they have received. So we have stories to share and letters to write with our guest today, and I can't wait to hear who this is.
Well,
Janet?
Thank you. We have another wonderful guest in a lineup of really dreamy people. And I would just like to say, for those of you listening, the people we have as guests are really, they're wonderful. They're people who live their lives beautifully in a variety of ways. They're people who are emotionally comfortable and forthcoming. They're people who are easy with honesty and sharing their lives. They are people who know that life is always, but always mid-journey, and people who are willing to share what they have learned. So today's guest is Tom Swift, who is the captain of the Financial Avengers. Tom is a financial advisor, an investment manager, and a part-time playwright who has had plays produced through Playground, which is a San Francisco organization that gives voice to emerging playwrights. And Tom, welcome. And my first question to you is, what are some of the more interesting challenges you've met in life? And of course, I'm saying that thinking of how are you the captain of the Financial Avengers?
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you very much, Janet. I had no idea I was part of the dreamy people crowd.
You're one of the dreamiest.
And I'm proud. My shrink would also be very proud. The challenges are an interesting thing to talk about, obviously, and possibly one of the greatest challenges that I ever had was testing positive for HIV, and that was in the mid-90s, during a period of time when that actually shouldn't have happened, because we knew how to do prevention at that time. And that was a pretty fundamental point in my life that created a lot of change and a lot of growth, and to a certain extent has given me more blessings than I ever anticipated at the time. I didn't believe, obviously, that this was a blessing, but it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. How that connects with Financial Avengers is relatively straightforward. At the time, I realized that, first of all, I thought I was going to die. And then I learned quite quickly that I was going to live perhaps a long life, but I'd taken a lot of decisions financially focused on the possibility of a short life. So what occurred was I decided to try and find someone who could help me do some financial planning, and most of the people that I went to were completely unable to give me any advice. And in fact, the College of Financial Planning, which is the institute that give certification to financial planners, I called them and they basically told me that I should plan to die and not live. So I realized that there was an unmet need, and I began providing financial planning services to HIV-positive gay men who were planning for a future they never thought they'd have.
So these are men who came to you and they thought they were going to die. They mm-hmm. assumed that this diagnosis was a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am saying they probably lived recklessly.
In some cases, yes.
And thinking that they weren't going to live, and glory be, they were living and had no more money. Your mission was to make sure that people planned for living.
Exactly, as opposed to dying. And to try and balance the uncertainty of a longer life with the with also an understanding that you needed to grab life and take hold of it. Financial Avengers has become far more than that original mission. We started in the mid-early 90s, and I'll never forget the phone call I got from a lovely woman who said, "Do I have to be sick to be your client?" And I realized, of course, that by focusing on one subset, you were excluding others. And so we just broadened it from there. And now it's really much more focused on just providing decent, ethical financial services to everyone who needs it, as opposed to just rich folks who probably don't, because that's how our industry is focused.
On people who might not get the same attention as wealthier people get with Wall Street brokers.
Exactly.
So you're looking after the world in a really important way. What is it you say on your message, on your answering machine? It's on the ongoing fight for, would you just say your phrase, because it's so intriguing and endearing?
Well, what we try to say is that everyone who joins us is a member of a larger family of agents. And we, of course, are the leaders of the Financial Avengers, and they are our agents, and we are all joined together in the ongoing fight for financial freedom.
There you go, the ongoing fight for financial freedom. It's just wonderful. And how long ago was it that you were diagnosed?
I tested positive in 95.
Okay.
I may have gotten it earlier than that. It's uncertain, but so far health is fabulous, and I'm glad I planned for a long life, because it's been a fantastic adventure since then.
Yes, I imagine it has. And how lucky for all the people who have you in their lives. I mean, I speak from having known you for a long time, and I know that you had once mentioned that your doctor had said you could look forward to a life of
20 to 30 years,
Which is more than I've been given as a diagnosis.
If I hit 70, I'll be happy.
I will too. Okay, so, I mean, if I do. You, I want to hit 120. So how were you raised? With what kind of wonderful values and inspiration were you raised that you managed to take this turn in your life and take your own lesson and make it work for other people so sensitively and brilliantly?
We'll have to talk to my shrink about how I was raised. No, that's a bad joke. I was raised... my parents did a fantastic job at raising their children and should be very, very proud. But I think as all parents, I also think, experience a degree of frustration or disappointment because things didn't possibly pan out the way that they originally anticipated.
You're one of how many?
Just three.
Three, okay.
But the primary thing that I was raised with as a tenant, and this was hammered in by my father, was to tell the truth and to be ethical and honesty above all else. And oddly, and that really, my dad was an attorney, and that really was his touchstone. That was his totem. That was his thing. And
lived. So he stands outside all those vile attorney jokes.
Exactly. And though he could tell a good attorney joke with the rest of them, he was quite a man. But it's odd, you know. Sometimes the things that you push the hardest end up bringing the most pain in your life. Because my father's insistence on ethics, honesty, and constant revelation is what brought me out of the closet at a time when not a lot of people were doing it, and then caused him and my mom quite a bit of pain. And that was the same with the HIV as well.
And see where that would.
And it was one of those odd things because it was the first time I'd ever actually seen, you know, my dad being somewhat hypocritical.
In what way?
Well, he would rather have not known the truth, or possibly even counseled me to hide it or subsume it.
That for embarrassment on his end, or for not wanting you to live a difficult life?
I think a combination of both, mm-hmm. quite frankly. And that changed, because the one thing that my father had the capability of doing was changing and learning, and that was his great strength and the great gift he gave. I think he began to realize, as we spent time together outside of our family, that, you know, living a lie was impossible, and living the truth was the only way. And in fact, the truth that he gave to us was the way to live the life, and that was a learning experience for him.
So who would get a love letter from you today?
Well, it sounds like I want to write to my dad, but he and I kind of resolved our stuff before he died, and I'm very, very happy that that occurred. I want to write a letter to my mom.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about your mother.
Well,
before I ask you the question, which is, what are the, well, we could just get right to it, I think. What are the three things, if you have three or four or two, it doesn't really matter, that you want your mother most to know, and whether or not you've said them before?
Do you want me to tell you about my mom, or do you want me to tell you the three things I wanted to know, or shall I roll it all into one?
Roll it all into one.
Okay. The three things that I want my... well, let me tell you about my mom. I brought up disappointment earlier. My mom was a teenage dancer in New York City in the 1950s and was in Balanchine's original company.
Oh, my goodness. So entertainment.
Before he was Balanchine. And then she had an allergic reaction and was brought home by her parents. Because young girls didn't do that at that time. Young girls went to college and became teachers. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that was a formative experience in her life.
So she did become a teacher?
She did, and then got married and was a wonderful mother and a wonderful housewife. But I think that her dream was destroyed. Mm-hmm. And I believe that some of the disappointment she may have felt regarding me and her children is that the dream did not live on with them, with her children.
As an entertainer?
As an entertainer.
Do you not count?
No, because although my degree is in theater, I went and worked in penitentiaries for 6 years in a nonprofit theater company, as opposed to going to Broadway and becoming a famous, fabulous star.
Which so. I think you probably could have done.
Well, yeah.
You're star to me. Okay.
Well, so what do I want to tell her?
You know, even this, as I'm listening to you, even this sounds like a wonderful thing to include when you let a parent know that you understand what their dreams broken are. I mean, I think that's a beautiful thing to do. But let her
know. No, I hadn't thought about that, because I think, to a certain extent, you know, how much of it was a child finding his own way, and how much of it was a child absolutely going in the opposite direction because parents pointed north and they go south, and that is one of the downsides of youth.
Yes.
So I think that that's actually an interesting thing to talk about.
I think one of the beautiful things about any tribute to a person, a love letter in particular, is the gift of having paid attention. And I find so often that people say on receiving these, I didn't know you knew that about me. Or especially with parents, older parents, I didn't know you knew that about me, with tears in their eyes. Or, I didn't know, I never realized you remembered that. And so it's the gift of having remembered or having been aware.
Well, and to a certain extent, that's the other some other things that I want to say. I obviously want to tell her I love her. Well, let me just step back for a second. My mom has Alzheimer's.
Oh.
And so in part, one of the reasons I want to write the letter is I want to, because the fog is beginning to drift in. And I want to write a letter before the fog envelops her.
Yes.
And so so that's partially what's motivating. It's not one of your three reasons. But I think I want to say that
as well.
Motivation
is an important, beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to know that.
I obviously want to tell her that I love her very much. One thing I want to do is thank her for all sorts of things. I want to thank her for financial help. She's always been incredibly generous. And although sometimes people do the things that have been the most challenging. Finance has always been a challenge in my life, and at an early stage, I often took a lot from my parents without giving back in return. Mm-hmm. And I want to acknowledge that and to thank them for it.
When you say you took without giving, I don't mean to be the shrink or play it, but you're such a giving person. Your very spirit is giving. Maybe you gave in some way that you're not aware of. Well, when she writes to you, you'll find out. Okay.
Yeah, well, and plus you didn't see me when I was in my 20s, so it wasn't always pretty.
Okay.
there were loans that didn't get paid back. And in our practice, when we talk about finance, we do state that, there's this huge emotional burden that is often created through economics and finance. Mm-hmm. And the way to address it is to confront it and mm-hmm. stipulate it. And I want to thank her for forgiving that, because it helped me to be who I am today, and I couldn't have been it without her. But I don't want to be too focused on finance, because I really want to thank her for teaching us how to cook.
Oh.
My brother, my sister, and I are fantastic cooks. Not gourmet cooks, not, over-the-top cooks, but we are functioning creators of food, and I can't believe how many people in America today can't cook a meal.
Oh, I know.
And I see it because people come to me for financial planning, and invariably we look at the lunch line item and the dinner line item, and they're spending $800 a month going out to eat, and it's like, why aren't you bringing your lunch, and why aren't you cooking at home?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes children, this is actually where I get really fascinated by this subject, so just tell me to shut up if I absolutely need to, is don't recognize the little things that their parents teach them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My mom cooked a dinner every single night of our childhood, and although she didn't sit down and say, I'm going to teach you how to cook, in doing that, she taught us all how to function in the world in a wonderful way. And it's odd because my dad couldn't cook himself out of a box. and it was only when you looked at my dad and his inability in the kitchen and him looking at his children able to cook and wondering how that occurred and almost being mystified by it, you then realize, wow, this really is a skill.
Well, it's not only a skill, but...
And a gift.
Yes, and a gift, but also cooking as a metaphor for giving
mm-hmm.
to others and for taking care of yourself.
And for putting things together and
yes.
for problem solving, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I really want to, thank Mom for the chicken recipe.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And for the chicken and rice meal, which I had last night, which is still my favorite meal in the world, is chicken and rice.
Wow, you're making me hungry. just wanted to remind our listeners that this is KUSF 90.3 FM Love Letters Live.
Now, I have a question. We've just started this here today, the things you want to tell her very briefly. Is there anything that you would want to tell her that you never have that may have... Of course, it sounds like from what you've said that you've been able to say difficult things to your parents. And what could there be that's left, maybe? But anything that you've never said that you would like to?
Well, I want to tell her explicitly that I love her before
mm-hmm.
that communication may not come through, and of course I've told her that before, but we say I love you in so many different ways, mm-hmm. and I think there is a way to say it in a heartfelt way that is not just, I love you at the end of a phone conversation.
And of course putting it on paper. means that she can look at it as often as she wants to before, as you say, that fog envelops her. Mm-hmm. And what a sad thing that is to think about. I was going to ask you if, when you write this, and I know you're going mm-hmm. to, I'm just going to give you the notes that I took as you were talking, and when you write to her, if there's some really remarkable, it doesn't have to be remarkable, if there's some response that you would like to share with us that we can let our listeners know, I think sometimes that's so helpful. I know Teresa had an instance where she wrote to somebody who was
in the early stages of Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and it was very gratifying. This is my sister-in-law that I've known for 40 years and love dearly, and she was not able to write a response to me, but every time I talked with her on the phone for about a month afterwards, she told me that she read the letter every day and how mm-hmm. much she loved the memories that it evoked.
And that brings up a whole other issue to talk about memories, because one of the things I want to thank my mother for, or at least talk to her about, is how many wonderful memories of the childhood. Mm-hmm. And it is a strange balance, isn't it, Janet? Mm-hmm. On the one hand, to say things that may be difficult, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking about some of the things to say, and to perhaps admit that perhaps my life did not turn out the way she wanted, and I hope she's okay about that. But also to say, you know, it was a pretty darn good life, and you did a pretty darn good job. And
I think that's so important to let parents know that, because I think as parents, we wonder, you know, are our children okay with what they have and who they are?
Well, and the older I think we get as children, the more perspective you have both
right.
on how difficult parenting is on the one hand, and actually how good you are to have turned out as well as you did on the other.
Right, and isn't that nice that you've gotten smarter in life like we do? But you mentioned memories, and I think specifics is so nice. I think it's wonderful to say things like, I remember what you looked like in that blue dress mm-hmm. and how beautiful you were. Any kind of specifics that bring them back to their strongest time.
Well, speaking of, you know, I remember her in the kitchen making mm-hmm. the pork chops mm-hmm. or the chicken or the gravy.
Yes.
And that actually... again, is a very comforting moment.
Yes. Okay. So you'll do this, and you'll let us know if there is anything. And
yes, ma'am.
In a moment, thank you. And in a moment, Teresa's gonna. You want to do station identification? Are we about ready for that?
Well, we certainly can. We certainly can do that. Listener involvement, I think, is what I'd like to do now, because we have we ask our listeners to send us letters, and in a little while I'll share with you how you can do that. We have a letter here, Janet, that's a Dear Janet. It says, I write emails and call my sister all the time, but that's not the same as a love letter as you describe it. I feel awkward just suddenly handwriting a love letter and sending it. So how do I approach that?
Write it and send it. I think it's wonderful. I think it will be a godsend. First of all, there's something about seeing a handwritten envelope in your pile of junk that is the mail these days. So I think that'll be wonderful. And personally, as much as I love email, and I'm pretty much glued to the internet and Google, and I check it too often, and I love it. But it's not a love letter. And that doesn't even mean that you can't get something loving on an email. I mean, Tom and I do that all the time. I'm constantly writing him love letters. But the truth of the matter is, as much as the love is there, it's not the same as a love letter. It's not exactly a gift. When he has to turn the machine on, he has to wait for it to warm up. He has to download what I've attached. He has to get the paper and put it in the tray. He has to print it out and wait for it to come. And then it's not on a beautiful piece of stationery. But the most important thing is he's had to do all the work. So I ask you, what kind of gift is that? Better it should come in a beautifully wrapped package, your envelope, with heart stickers and a beautiful stamp, or sealed with a kiss or something on this beautiful package. That is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the light of that, nobody's going to remember that it used to be email and now it's a letter. It's going to be glorious.
So in terms of the question that our listener has asked, you say just send it. Would it be, I mean, this listener was feeling awkward about just sending something out of the blue to a sister who's expecting an email or a phone call.
You know, it's never really out of the blue. It's something that's in your heart and in your head. And a love letter is really that beautiful combination of feeling and thought.
Uh-huh.
So it's never out of the blue.
I guess the one thing I'd add, if I can jump right in, and sometimes, because this is what we learn in theater, is that the best way to overcome something is to state it. It's okay to, in your first line, say, I know you're probably not expecting this,
perfect,
but I really wanted to say, put some things on paper that I've been meaning to tell you for a long time.
Beautiful. Thank you.
That's a great way to start.
And that first line is important, and you can always do things with it. And speaking of, I didn't ask you this, but your mother, being the way you described her, in any way being a female, must have favorite colors. Mm-hmm. What will you choose as stationery? I think that's really important. Pale blue, mint green.
I hadn't thought about it.
I
may choose the brand new letterhead that we're getting for the company because that she's very proud to receive things
perfect
like that.
But
I don't know. I mean, and this is, again, one of the reasons why I love this project and I love this concept, because every night I go home and there's nothing in my mail that interests me.
I know.
And letters have become such a gift because of email, and I think they're worth giving.
Yes, and I must say I have a whole lot to say about the United States Post Office, which maybe we can talk about one day, because I think they are just glorious. They are your partner in this love letters business. You can't have just two people with a love letter. You need a partner to get it from point A to point B.
Yes. Thank God for the U.S. Postal Service. We love to trash them sometimes, but I got to say, it's probably the best value around. What do we spend?
39 cents.
39 cents, and that will go across town or across the country.
Right, exactly. And I mean, when I was a girl, it was 3 cents, and postcards were a penny, and so I could complain about that extra 36 cents. But on the other hand, you know, toilet paper's gone up, too. So what isn't more expensive?
There's not much for 39 cents these days.
Right.
I think it's a great bargain. And thank you, Tom, for being with us today. And I want to thank all of our listeners. We hope that you will tune in every Saturday afternoon at 2:30 on KUSF 90.3 FM. We have wonderful guests that enlighten us and bring joy to us. We encourage you to put your loving sentiments into words and to send them while you still have the chance. Let me give you our address so that you can write a letter to us. And this is where we bend the rules, because we'll ask you to email us. Here's the address, Love Letters Live, no dashes or dots or anything between the letters, all run together, Love Letters Live at sbcglobal.net. We'll love to hear from you, and your letter may be read on the air. Certainly, Janet and or I will respond to your letter in some way. Please ask us your questions or send us the results of your love letters. Tell us your stories. We love to hear them.
And if you would like to be in touch with our guest, if there's anything you'd like to share with him or ask, please send that to us, and we will be happy to forward it to Tom. And if he can, he will get back to you.
Okay. So that's it, Janet, for this week.
Okay, so until next week, with love
from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye for now.